Good day, everyone. Welcome back to the Atlanta Podcast. I am your host, Mappy Davis. This is the Friday episode. It looks like we're doing 2 a week, guys. We're just doing it, damn it. Hey, we need to hear from you. We need to find out how you're finding out about this show, the gosh darn Atlanta Podcast. Did I tell you? Did a friend tell you? Did you magically find it through Google? Would love to know. Also, what you think about the show. Matt B. Davis at iCloud.com. I'm also Matt B. Davis on every freaking platform. On today's program, Mike Panuski. Now, I've known Mike a little while. I got introduced through friends way back when. When I say way back when, I mean a few years ago. And as I say to him in this episode, he is exactly the kind of person that I would want for this show. He's Atlanta-based. He's got a cool career. We talk some about Atlanta, and we talk mostly about his very, very cool acting career. Now, you know me, I do not like to go in and describe 100 things on the front end that we're going to talk about, but he's got so many bloody roles, I just kind of have to do it. So, according to Wikipedia, which, come on, it says most notably Chief of Detectives Kenny Moran on Law & Order Criminal Intent, and those of you that watch Law & Order know that they call that the Chief of D's. But he's also big on his additional credits. Again, you can go through IMDb, which we will, just to throw a few in here. Big Love, The Sopranos, Blue Bloods, Conviction, Spaceballs, One Tree Hill, CSI Miami, Runaway Jury. That's just a smidgen. And then there's a gazillion commercials. He's currently the local vice president of SAG-AFTRA. I didn't know that. Or maybe it came up. I'm not sure. Anyway, he's been in everything. So you're going to hear his voice. And you might be like, I've heard that voice. And then you're going to Google him and look at his picture and go, yes, I've seen him in everything. And then you will begin to continue to appear in everything as he will, I'm sure, continue to work. So let's just get right into it. Mike and I, not too long ago, please enjoy. We had a great chat. Away we go. Going to dive right in. Mike.
Great.
Good to see you.
Good to see you. Thanks.
The last time we spoke was at, what's the name of that famous restaurant we met at? They just redid it.
Something really famous.
Super Atlanta famous. Somebody I should talk to.
Famous.
Somebody I should talk. I should
Mary
have on.
Max.
I should have on the show. Not Mary Max. The other one.
Vortex.
You're getting super close.
I'm not. It's not. I'm sorry. It's not ringing a bell.
Well, I thought maybe you
Must
picked
I
it.
Maybe, I thought maybe
you
I pick it.
I thought maybe you picked it.
Well,
right there on the corner of North and
the Varsity.
I'm serious. This is going to bug me. We're not going to be able to move forward until figure it out.
Sorry.
Okay. So think Atlanta Institution Bar, but also has food. North and right just beyond, just
I'm
north
sorry,
of Little
dude,
Five there.
Trying to blank. Taco Mac?
No. It's going to hit
Tin Lizzy's?
It's going to hit me in the middle of the conversation. They recently renovated. How about that in the last year or two? Oh, my God.
I don't get in town much. So maybe that's why I'm not. I'm so sorry.
Manuel's Tavern.
There you go.
God.
Boy, I don't know why I didn't think of that because that's a big industry spot. Man, I'm really lame.
Is it still?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's still GPP meets there quite often. And it is sort of a central place where people in the industry do meet in town because everybody knows it. And it's cool. It's good.
So back when you and I had lunch, which was either like 2008 or 2010, maybe.
Holy cow. Wow, that far back.
Back then, I remember being so impressed that you were this Atlanta guy who consistently worked, right? And that was far before this thing that we've had recently. So,
yeah. Even in advance of the tax incentives, yeah.
No, like, right. So maybe it had started. Maybe we talked in 2012. I don't know. The point is, a lot has happened here. But before we go there, we'll back up. Like, okay. we don't need to get your entire life story. But where did you grow up?
I grew up in California, Southern California, Orange County. And went to high school there, went to college at UCLA. Worked out in the business there for about 10 years, did very well, but then got married, started having kids, and didn't want to raise kids in LA.
Yeah, I had the same experience. I think I might have told you that several years ago.
Might have been, yeah.
Except I got out of the business, as it were. I was never quite a working person. I was like the starving artist type. My wife and I both were.
Huh?
But you got work right out of UCLA, which, acting?
I guess I was fortunate. I got my SAG card 6 months out of college, which was unheard of at that point. And I started doing a lot of commercials, which is great because, you know, with commercials and residuals, you can do some nice stuff that'll pay for a while, so it'll support you while you're in class and trying to get film and TV jobs, and so that worked out pretty good. And
were you the envy of all your friends?
I'd have to ask my friends. I guess. I mean, you know, I always get people talking about how much I work, but I don't know. I guess.
Well, I mean,
I don't. I don't worry too much about that part of it. I mean, I think I'm kind and decent, but I don't necessarily think about my image to other people. I just try to live my truth. And people seem to respect the fact that I'm working, and I do work more than most, but I work really hard at it and always have. And I think that pays off.
Yeah, I mean, I think from the time that I met you, I would like text you pretty frequently, like, hey, you showed up on this again, like pretty regularly. But when you were working back then, can we say what year it is? Do you care if people know how old you are? Do you do that Hollywood thing where we can't know how old you are?
No, it matters. I got my card in 84, so I've been working professionally since 84. It was 33 years now.
Right. So yeah. You were there during the Olympics?
I was.
Do you remember anything about that? Was it a big deal?
I remember a little bit. I remember one thing I vividly remember is that the traffic was incredible. It was like it's the best traffic you'd ever have in Los Angeles because
everybody left.
All of the residents that could rented out their places to people coming in for the Olympics, or they just decided to get out of town. So getting around town was a piece of cake.
That's awesome.
Which was exactly the opposite of what everybody expected.
Right. Do you remember what part of town you lived in back then?
I had an apartment. Then I believe in the Valley in Van Nuys, I think. Yeah. But I do remember a couple of times driving into the heart of it to do the whole pin trading thing.
Right. People trade
pins. People trading pins and buying pins and, you know, people asking for certain pins. And so I remember doing that a little while. I don't remember if I went to any events. I mean, I was fresh out of college. I didn't really have money to go buy to Olympic tickets. But
well, it's interesting to think about because now, first of all, LA is going to get it again in 10 years or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But also, because I remember here, it was the same thing. I moved away from Atlanta in 96, and apparently everyone also left. And now with Airbnb, you're going to make a killing, right?
Like, oh,
no. Like, I don't even know. How did people do it before? Like, the newspaper, I guess?
Probably.
Like, certainly
posted an ad.
Certainly no internet.
You posted an ad on a bulletin board somewhere, I guess.
Right. Do you remember the first job you had that, like, meant something to you? Like, I assume you worked in, like, student films or whatever, but do you remember, like, the first commercial or sort of real gig you got that you thought, hey, I'm a working actor?
Well, I guess the first one that I really kind of went, wow, was the second job I had, which I did Beverly Hills Cop, and I worked with Eddie Murphy.
Okay.
And at that time, I don't know if you remember, he had just recently signed his big deal with Paramount, and he was the hot new thing off of Saturday Night Live. And
he was the biggest thing in the world.
He was it.
Right.
And I'm working with Eddie Murphy, and I'm, you know, a year out of college. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this is the real deal. And it was great fun.
And this is Beverly Hills Cop 1?
Yeah, the good one. Yeah. a really funny one.
I think 2 was okay. I'm trying to remember. It's been a few years. I mean, some sequels are god-awful, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think 2 was god-awful.
Nah.
3 was god-awful. There was a 3, right?
Oh, yeah. There was a 3.
With Judge Reinhold as, like, the head of the cops, and now we're just getting silly, right?
Yeah, now, yeah, yeah.
So can I ask what you did in Beverly Hills Cop 1?
When Eddie tracks he's tracking this crate, I guess, delivered internationally to this warehouse.
Right.
Off of the airport, and I was in the office in that airport warehouse where we were searching through records to track where that had come from.
Right.
And I just had one line, I think.
Right.
But it was, you know, it was one of those things where, because it's a comedy, you know, you're playing around with it and you're trying to find different ways for him to be funny, of course.
Right.
And trying not to crack up all the whole time. And so, yeah, I just had the one scene.
And he says, we're going to start with this crate right here.
Yeah, exactly. Start with this crate right here. And
are you impressed with my random line from Beverly Hills
Cop
Knowledge?
That. Yeah, that's really good, actually. Yeah.
You want to hear something super funny? I saw the movie with my grandmother.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's weird to think about, rest her soul. I would stay with my grandmother a couple days in the summer or whatever, and she took me to that movie. And I remember I said, Grandma, can I sit further down? Because I knew there was going to be cursing, and I was going to be so nervous. At 1984, I was 12 years old. I was like, can I please sit away from you?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I've seen the movie 100 times since. And
cool.
So anyway, so cool. So you're working with Eddie Murphy.
It was really fun. Yeah.
And then, and you said you got to play around with it and stuff, but were you starstruck? Were you nervous? Were you like, oh my gosh, I got to do a good job?
Oh, I was completely starstruck.
I got to impress the director.
Oh, it was a big problem I had when I first got started, is I was totally starstruck with some of these people. and I came to realize, on a very practical level, that you can't do that, because we're all there, you know, we're all hired to do a job in a very high stress environment, high pressure, and you got to show up and deliver. And when you're all there on the set, technically you're all equal, because you all have to participate. You all have something to give to make this thing work. And if you're sitting there looking across from this person going, oh my God, it's Eddie Murphy, man. This is so, oh, that's my line. You're messing up.
Right.
I mean, that's completely unprofessional. So it was something that I had to really work on. I had to really sort of create a different sort of inner dialogue for myself about it. And, you know, you can have a moment outside of doing the work in the scene where maybe you go to somebody and say, hey, man, I'm so glad to be here. I love your work. And you can have that. But then it's like any job.
Right,
you know,
it's go time.
Let's sit down. It's time to get to work, and let's get it done.
But now I am dying to know who else early on, or even not early on, that you had that starstruck experience that you had to kind of like.
Oh, wow.
There's probably a lot of them.
It was a lot of them.
Off the top
that
of
was
your
the
head.
One I really remember, because I remember it very vividly, and it was probably the first time I'd worked with somebody that big.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you even know off the top of your head how many television programs you've appeared on? Do you even know? I'm not going to ask you to name them, trust me, but like, do you ballpark your...
This is really weird, but only because I was working on something where I had to go look at my IMDb page recently, and I saw how many credits they list on there.
Right.
Now, this is not how many episodes of television,
right?
But how many credits.
Right, because there's reoccurring if you did six or seven or eight.
Yeah, if I did 8 or 10 of a show,
right,
it only counts as one credit.
Right.
But I have 159 credits on IMDb, which is... wow. I mean, I look at that. I remember the very first time I learned about that. I was at a party in my neighborhood, and one of my neighbors walked over to me and she said, would you sign this for my daughter? And there's just all these pages of paper with my name at the top and all these, my life's resume to that point listed on there. Where did you get this?
Right.
Oh, it's IMDb, Internet Movie Database.
Right.
I'd not heard of it. So I looked this all up, and oh my gosh, there's my whole career.
Right.
It's all listed right there. And it's really cool, because, you know, it's nice to somebody keep track of it.
Do you have to correct it ever?
Sometimes. Yeah, it's not. I know a lot of people have trouble with this. It's not 100% accurate. And they get and what's also weird is it's not easy to correct. They're very possessive about how they have their whole thing set up.
So is it more omissions or things that you weren't on that you have to undo?
Both.
Really?
Yeah. Both.
I mean, I would assume, I'm totally making this up, again, 2017, that there's some sort of way that, because once upon a time, they had to do it, or regular people, it was some sort of Wikipedia style, I would guess. But
right.
Nowadays, I would assume the studio, the producer, whoever, gets an intern or some person to go, hey, upload this, because we want it to be on there, because now it's a marketing tool.
Well, you do have the option to add credits.
Right.
Yourself, because I do that. In fact, now it's part of the regimen where my agent says, you know, as soon as the job is over, you need to go add it yourself to make sure it's up there as soon as possible.
Right. Do you wait till it's actually shown? Because something's never made it, right?
No, I wait till I finish shooting it.
And then you put it on whether...
Because then if I'm up for something else and my agent says to the casting director, he just did so-and-so, and they go there and they see that it's there, and it's sort of a verification. But you can add that stuff. But like bio, for example, there's a bio on my page that I didn't write.
Right.
I don't know where it came from.
Right.
And I've asked several times to have it taken down, and they won't take it down.
What is there anything wrong about it, or you just...
No, I just don't want it up there because I didn't write it. Not to mention it mentions my wife's name.
Which you don't like.
Which I don't like. It also has my birth date on there, which there's a whole debate now about IMDb and ageism. And, and even though a lot of that is public information, the fact that it's in that resource where, that the industry uses,
right,
it does tend to sometimes put an image in people's head of, of your age.
Wow, that guy's 74. Holy shit.
Yeah. Oh, God. I didn't know he was that old.
Right.
Oh, well, shit, he's an old man. I don't want to work with him.
Right.
You know, maybe he's going to get sick or geez, she looks good for that age or, you know, so I would like to take it off. And there's a, the, you know, the union sued IMDb and won in California, but then now it's up on appeal. And so it's all stalled right now. So. I mean, it's a cool resource, and it's kind of fun to look back at all those things, and you think, oh, my God, I did that. And some you don't remember.
Like at all.
So, yeah. But some you do. And then, I don't know. It's fun for my kids to see because they can go back and look at all this stuff before they were around.
And it also doesn't count. I assume there's pilots you shot that never even made it, right? There's got to be a bunch of those, right?
Yeah. They're on there.
Oh, they're on there too, even if they didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, it still counts as a job and as a show you did.
Right, but again, like nowadays, I would think so. But if it was in 92, I would think it didn't because it never saw the light of day and no one heard of it.
I got stuff on there all the way back to my first job. So, I mean, if it's there and it's shot and it's in the catalog of entertainment out there, I guess it's going
to
pop up.
Right. So we were getting to like who you might have been nervous about early on. Just looking at this once in a while.
Think of who
I should pull it up, actually.
Work with back in the day.
I mean, I don't want to make you go through your entire career, but I think it might be fun. Now that we're sitting here to actually do this.
You're going to scroll to the end of the page, and we're going to work toward the front.
Well, I didn't...
I'm trying to think of who...
Honestly, this wasn't my intent, but do you mind if we look at a few?
Sure.
Like,
I just like whatever you want.
I totally might just like to roll. Like, this is just like, hey, man.
Go
whatever,
for it.
Whatever comes up, comes up.
It's okay.
Well, you are an Aries, which I also am.
Okay.
So that's one thing we have in common.
I'm right on the cusp, I understand. I don't follow that, but I was born on the 20th.
Well, so how about this? How about just this general... So like there's one thing to do IMDb, but life and career on Wikipedia. Is that you or did somebody else type this?
I have not submitted anything to Wikipedia.
Okay. Ever. Can I read a little bit of it?
Sure, go ahead.
It says where you're born, you graduated in theater, you won the Natalie Wood Award.
I did.
You did, you're agreeing or you're asking?
I did win the Natalie Wood Award, yeah.
His most notable role has been that of Chief of Detectives, Kenny Moran, on Law & Order Criminal Intent. You've been seen on Recount. You appeared as legendary football coach Bobby Bowden in the film We Are Marshall. I didn't know that.
I did.
Guess who's coming here in a couple weeks?
Bobby Bowden?
Yep.
Oh, fantastic.
You want to go?
I'd love to meet him, sure.
Because I reached out to his people.
That's great.
When I saw he's coming to support a documentary.
Oh, they did a documentary about him?
I guess it's called... whatever it's called, the Bowden years, whatever. And I reached out to those people and it's funny. You can tell that it's like super old school. Like it's not some big PR firm. It's like his wife or some woman who's like, yeah, Bobby,
family,
he likes to eat lunch about this time and we'll get together. I was like, all right, if I can get 20 minutes to coach, that would be great. Let's go see that together.
I'm the only guy who's ever played him in a movie. So
as of now,
that'd be as of now.
Okay. Yeah. Then it says initial credits include, and there's 1,000 shows you've been on. And then it says
some of that sort of sounds like a bio I or somebody might have written for me, so maybe they lift it off of that.
Yeah, I mean, this is, and then filmography.
I do have a bio on my website, and maybe somebody lifted it off.
And then for filmography, they only list 4 things. That's crazy. On Wikipedia, they list Spaceballs, Reckless, The Founder, and The Good Wife.
Oh, okay. That's not bad.
What was your name in Spaceballs?
I was First Class Asshole. I was the cross-eyed laser gunner. Yep.
It actually lists you as Laser Gunner Philip Asshole.
Oh, that's true. I was Philip Laser.
All right, well, let's...
First class Philip Asshole.
Well, let's talk about working with Mel Brooks. I mean, let's just go straight there.
Mel Brooks is a treasure.
I mean...
I adore that man. And he's so kind. And it was just fun. I mean, one of the greatest jobs in this business is doing comedy. Because your job when you show up that day is just to find ways to be funny.
Right.
And those guys and him, and it was so fun. Because him and Rick Moranis and George Weiner and all the guys we were working with, we had Michael Winslow on there, and it's all about finding different ways to make it work, make the laugh work, make the joke work.
Right.
And so they're really precise about it. You know, when you see it on screen,
it looks easy.
It
right.
looks like they just turned the camera on and boom, there it was, and it was funny. No, I mean they're rehearsing it down to the syllable. And I remember, for example, there's a line in there where Dark Helmet's complaining about the the lack of power on things. He said, what do I got back there? A Cuisinart? They went back and forth, I'm not kidding, for about an hour, whether to say Cuisinart or Evinrude.
What's an Evinrude?
An Evinrude's a boat motor.
Okay.
But they that's the thing. They didn't know, would people know what an Evinrude is?
And it's a funny word.
It's a funny word.
Right.
And it's a boat motor. But because, you know, Rick's Canadian and you know, and they're more, and he was, what was the thing he did with Dave Thomas, the brothers?
Oh, right.
The outdoor guys.
Right.
You know, they would, it's for, sort of from that culture where it's right. a boat motor, but everybody's got a Cuisinart. It's a food processor.
Right. Well, now you're going
to. So they went with Cuisinart.
Right. But now you're killing me because I can't think of the. Take off to the great wide north. Rick and what's his name?
Yeah. Rick and Dave Thomas. They were.
People are now yelling it in their cars.
Yeah, they are.
Or wherever they listen to this. I found.
Yeah, it was it was a SCTV thing.
Oh, my God.
That turned into a movie.
It's going to hit me in a minute.
Hey, hoser. Jose had the beer slurping
off,
wonder skunk dog.
You hoser.
Take off, you hoser.
All right, I'm gonna have to flip through. We're gonna.
Well, anyway, but the whole thing was that they were so precise, and then once they set it, then you go back and you actually shoot it, and it looks like you've done it for the first time. And
right, but so here's the question:
great education watching that.
Right, but if once you shoot that the seventh time, the camera guys are gonna stop laughing or whatever. Like, how do you keep it like fresh?
Well, that's the craft. That's the craft. That's always the trick of being an actor, because you show up to work prepared. You know your lines. You know the character. You've rehearsed it. You're ready to go. But when that camera's on, you got to make it look like it's never happened before.
Right. Comb the desert.
That's the craft.
We ain't found shit.
Yep.
Oh, my God. Now you're going to make me want to go back and watch that one.
No, you know, I go out and speak to kids and stuff all the time. And of all the stuff I've done, that's the one they ask about.
Really?
Yeah, Spaceballs. Because it's gotten, which is weird, because when it first came out in theaters, it didn't do well. And it got panned by the critics.
I think I saw it in the theater.
Yeah. But over time, it gained a cult following, and then the Star Wars people adopted it.
Oh, yeah.
And so now it's part of Star Wars culture because it's a Star Wars spoof.
Right. Did you ever go to Comic-Con or Dragon Con or any of those?
No, never been. I got interviewed for the 25th anniversary of Spaceballs in one of those Star Wars magazines. They interviewed me and several people about Spaceballs.
Right.
I think it's great. I think it's really fun that it's still got such a fun life after all these years.
All right. I got to scroll back and find some fun ones, because the recent stuff, we can talk about that too, but come on. Oh man, there's so much stuff here, dude. So we'll put this in the show notes that nobody reads. That's what I call them, because nobody actually ever reads them. All right, this is interesting. You were in Law and Order in 4 episodes over the course of 6 years.
Yes.
Do you remember what you
was
were?
It the original Law and Order?
The original Law? No, not yeah. Law and Order. Sorry, L.A. Law.
Oh, L.A. Law. Yeah.
88 to 94. Yeah. Do you remember? Do you remember the judge's name? If you, I'll be super impressed.
I don't know.
So
I never played a judge, and I was really young to play a judge at that time too. I think I was still in my late 20s.
Right, because now you got the hair for it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've always looked older than I am.
Now, you're not going to believe this, but a conversation came up yesterday about Cop Rock with another guy. You were actually which how do we even explain that? How do we explain the phenomenon of Cop Rock to the young people?
Well, I actually tried to show my kids, because you know, with the advent of Glee and some of these other shows, I think, well, you know, you guys think this is so cool and innovative, but I did this show 20 years ago called Cop Rock.
It's been more than 20, but okay.
More than 20. Yeah, okay.
27.
A long time ago, called Cop Rock, which at the time everybody thought was crazy, including me. But Botchko and them, I thought it was brilliant. The thing about it, though, is there were times when it was brilliant, and it was times when it crashed, because it's a tough thing to do, to produce a 42-minute musical every 8 days.
Right.
That's tough. But the performances were amazing, and I got to do this scene, and the woman who sang was an actress named Loretta Devine, who's done a lot of great stuff since then. Just a phenomenal singer. And she was incredible. I was the foreman of a jury, and she did this song about Reasonable Doubt in the jury room, and she was amazing. But I just thought it was, you know, it was just a great risk to try and do. And yeah, it only lasted one season, but the flip side is we're still talking about it.
You know? Right.
And I think that there's a lot to be said for that. And I give Bochco a lot of credit for taking the shot. And I think that in there is some really brilliant television.
Wasn't there a show, now that I think about it, a few years ago that tried it, that was it a Vegas-based show, or it was called Vegas maybe?
That had musical numbers?
Yes. And it was like,
I'm not remembering.
And it was like, that's the thing, is like, it's like, is it kitschy? Is it supposed to be tongue in cheek? Are we supposed to take these people serious? It's just a hard tone to grab.
Yes.
So
yeah.
Anyhow, it came up the other day because we couldn't think of the name of a show.
Right.
But basically, if there's a popular show in the last, what would you say, 20 years, you've appeared on at least one episode. I mean, that's basically like, as you go through this, that, I mean, that's what I'm sort of.
Some, the one that I missed that I still have pains about is NYPD Blue.
You weren't in that?
No.
And you tried to?
I did. That was right after I moved here. So I didn't have as much access to it. And it never worked. I would have carried a tray, as they say, on NYPD Blue, to be on it.
Oh, just done.
Still one of my favorite shows.
Yeah, it was groundbreaking at the time. Again, it's hard to think, like, when you see stuff on old, like, whatever it's called, TV Land or whatever, to put things in context.
Yeah.
I mean, even talk about something like The Sopranos, right?
Yeah.
Which is as great as it is.
Yeah.
Like, you could rewatch it today and go through every season in a couple of days because you'd be so mesmerized by those characters.
Right.
But you have to put it in the context of whatever it's, you know, 1997. And there was nothing like it.
No.
Right? And that's why
those
shows that stay is like, okay, it's not just, it's tough to compare when people are like, oh, what are the greatest shows of all time? It's like, you got to like put it in context of things.
Sure.
Of what else was out there. Right.
Right.
Were you ever on The Wire? Did we talk about this?
I never did The Wire.
Would you have wanted to have done The Wire?
I could have done The Wire. It would have been great. It was a great show, but it didn't work out.
You read for it?
I don't know that I ever did. I don't remember. If I did, I don't remember it.
So let's talk about before the Atlanta boom. How did you stay so consistent as a working character guy when there's 10,000 guys that want your gig that live, you know, that live where they're shooting probably.
Right. Well, once I moved here,
what year was that? Just so we're clear.
94. And it was a different time. When I first moved here, it seemed to make great sense because we had a couple of TV series shooting here in the heat of the night and I'll Fly Away. And this was a popular regional market for movies of the week and feature films and thought, okay, this could work. Well, then as soon as I moved here, the Canadian tax incentives started. And then we had a Teamsters strike out here. And that changed the whole dynamic locally. So what happened initially, and this was the case for a lot of years for a lot of us out here, is that you have to work the region. So it's not just about working in Atlanta. I had to work everywhere from Carolina to Miami to Louisiana to Nashville. And so I put thousands of miles on my car every year because this is before the days of self-taping, which is what people do now, because I'd have to drive to New Orleans or to Orlando.
Just to get seen.
To go to audition, to be in the room for whatever they were shooting. And at the time, North Carolina was a big production center. They had Dawson's Creek and what's the other one?
One Tree Hill.
One Tree Hill. And then features and stuff there. And of course, New Orleans has been popular for a long time. It was pretty popping in Florida for a while, way back when, but that's tapered off. So I was driving all over the place to go to these auditions to stay in the game. And then once in a while, I stayed connected to Los Angeles. I'd go back out there for pilot season or I'd go audition. And then after a while, I did get connected in New York. And so what I was doing with my driving is every once in a while, I would fly out to LA or fly out up to New York for something and just to stay in the game. And that's just the way I did it. And I was fortunate enough that I had a wonderfully supportive wife. I still do have a wonderfully supportive wife. I said had. Sorry, honey. I have a fabulously supportive wife who is all behind, you know, going out and going for it. A great network of agents and people to help me, places to stay in LA, places to stay in New York. A buddy of mine worked for the airlines, would help me out with passes. And good. So
that's awesome.
I was able to have I had a pretty cool situation set up where I could take advantage of just about any opportunity. And, you know, you do what you got to do. And it worked out. So that's basically what I had to do for a long time. And now we're in this internet high-speed world where you most of the time put something on tape yourself. So I don't have to, I don't do all those miles anymore. I still do the occasional trip to LA or New York, but because when it comes down to making decisions at the end, you really got to be in the room.
Right. They want to see you.
They want to see you. And like The Good Wife, for example, I remember they said, no, this is a recurring gig. It's going to be on there for a while. The guy they pick's got to be in the room.
Right.
Okay. Then I'm there.
So
Madam Secretary is the same thing.
Right.
Yeah.
And are you on both those shows still?
Well, The Good Wife's off the air, but I was on there for five seasons off and on. And then I still play the Secretary of Defense on Madam Secretary occasionally whenever they need me.
Right. So does the way this stuff works, like any of these shows that last more than like three season, boom, you get like the whole syndication thing and now you're really cooking?
Well, yeah. As long as that show is in syndication, you're like, for example, I've done a lot of the shows like Blue Bloods, and like there's Law and Order running somewhere in the world
every effing day.
And I've done all the Law and Order shows and multiples of them, and you know, yeah, money keeps showing up. Sometimes it's a quarter, sometimes it's $100. It just depends.
They don't bulk them together. The union doesn't bulk them together.
Well, yeah, sometimes, there are oftentimes when they'll bulk a whole bunch of uses into one check.
Right.
And then sometimes, depending on where it was, it'll just be for one episode and that'll be it. It all depends, I think, on when the money comes in and what the usage is, depending on how they bulk it together in one check.
So just to give, we don't have to get too in the weeds on it, but just to explain, I'll explain what I think I understand and you can correct me to the average person. So Mike appears on a movie in 1987. It gets resold into some foreign market, mm-hmm. and it's shown on Thailand television. Mm-hmm. Somewhere down the line, you're going to get 40 cents for that.
Yeah, it's a I'm going to get a cut of something.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe small,
could be decent.
Right.
It depends on sold for, how money gets divided amongst the cast.
So that means that Mariska and Ice-T and those guys are just sitting on piles of fucking money.
Yes and no, because some of those series deals, especially when you start getting into real high dollar per episode fees, they will bargain those fees against their future usage. So in other words, that they come up with, I don't know, a $3 million fee per episode, okay? But
I thought you were going to say $300,000. They get paid $3 million an episode?
I don't know. I'm just guessing.
Okay.
They might.
Because that's cheaper than paying them for the next 50 years.
That's what I mean. They will, but that will include future usage.
Right. That's like, hey, man, we're giving you a big check now, so you can't get.
But then what the performer wants to be able to do is, okay, I have that money now that I can put it to work for me now instead of waiting.
Right.
You know, depending upon how the show gets sold, who knows? But this way, I'm going to bargain that against future usage.
Right. And that's obviously once a show's been on a little while and it gets popular.
Yeah, well, that's the only point you'll have leverage to do that. Very few performers get to do that.
Right.
Well, you remember back in the day, it was a big deal when the cast of Friends all got $1 million an episode.
Right.
Yeah. That's sort of the same thing. They got that against the future usage.
Right.
You know?
Right. That Matthew Perry, man, he works as much as you do. That guy's got a new show every...
He's a good actor.
Every other week he's got a new show.
I just saw him on the spinoff of The Good Wife, The Good Fight, that's on CBS All Access. He's good.
Look at you. That just rolled off your tongue like not even like you're trying to promote it or anything. Like,
no, I'm not trying to promote it at all, even though Scott Free and the production company has been very good to me. And I hope they continue to be good to me.
No, that's great. So it's interesting. The interview I just did yesterday where Cop Rock of all things came up is, it's, you know, this... that we're talking about, the thing is the Comic-Con guy, the guy who actually books the media for it. Not Comic-Con. Mm-hmm. Sorry, dude. Sorry, Dan.
Dragon-Con?
Dragon-Con.
Oh.
And you know how that culture has blown up so much?
Yeah.
That once upon a time there was a half a dozen of those things, and now there's a billion of them.
Every city has their own con.
Every city has their own, and it does, like, Comic-Con used to actually mean comic books, and now it's every movie that ever comes out. What's your connection to this? We don't know, but we're...
It's amazing how many productions or shows seem to find a way to connect to a comic.
John Cusack is appearing at this one. I have no idea how he relates to anything, but I love Cusack, and I'm going to hope I get to shake hands with the guy.
Okay.
Have you worked with John Cusack?
I was in Runaway Jury. We didn't have any scenes together, but we were in the movie together.
Were you a juror?
I met him at one point.
Were you a juror?
No, I played an investigator for Gene Hackman, who was the bad guy.
what's
fun.
What's working with Gene Hackman? Is he still alive?
Yeah, I think he's retired, but he's still alive.
Yeah, actors never seem to retire.
It depends, you know. I think he definitely did retire at some point. I think he was just.
I mean, he's a talk about a national treasure.
Oh my gosh, he's great,
right?
I mean, he's one of those people that you just, you know, happy to be in the same room with. You just right. love to watch him work,
right?
Yeah.
Runaway Jury is the one where they're in New Orleans, right? Or it mm-hmm. starts in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good one.
It's all in New Orleans. Yeah, it's very good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, you know, you mentioned when Canada got the thing, and this is mm-hmm. what I explain to people is that, like, Toronto was one, Austin was one, like, Seattle was one. Why has Atlanta stuck? Why are studios actually being built here?
Well, it's a combination of a lot of things. First of all, the incentives are really well written. It's a tax credit, so money does not come out of the state coffers. It's not as if they're writing production checks. You create tax credits, which is a sellable commodity, which they then sell to Georgia businesses, which Georgia business gets a break on their taxes, and then the production gets that money back from the money they spend in Georgia. And it's sort of a self-perpetuating system, which was really well written by the folks that wrote it. In addition to that, Atlanta's a nonstop flight from LA or New York. It's a great location for weather most of the time. We have just about every kind of terrain and climate here. In the beginning, we still had a decent amount of crew and and all. You got cord problems?
Yeah, I keep stretching mine, and I feel like the sound is going to come up, so I'm just like...
Okay, there we go.
This is not the most professional setup you've probably ever seen.
There's great crew here, I think the economy overall is good here. There's space to build.
So these other cities that had their little year or two, they don't have those, or you just think...
Well, the main thing they don't have is the incentive program.
And so... whoever the smart people at Georgia were like, wait a minute, we don't want to just be a flash in the pan. We want right. to make this long term.
Right. And the smart way about the focus of how they wrote it is they wrote it as a business incentive for Georgia business.
As opposed to
just a gift to the movie and TV industry. It's a vehicle to promote Georgia business. So what they try to do with it is the whole purpose here is to create greater economic prosperity in the state. Which is how you can sell it to the Gold Dome and the guys up there, is because it affects every county in the state, because everybody gets a chance to either take advantage of the tax credits. I had dinner with my eye doctor the other night and said, hey, I bought some of those credits, saved myself 20% on taxes.
He said that?
Yeah. I said, fantastic. That's what we want, you know? And then you have people shooting on location and using places all over the state and renting hotels and eating in restaurants and renting equipment and flowers and all this and using the dry cleaners. And, you know, business overall is better. We have more people relocating here that are buying homes, putting their kids in school, spending money, paying taxes. And like, for example, the average job created by the production incentive pays $80,000 a year. Some darn good living.
Yep.
So it's just a win-win across the board, and people get it. People get it because it affects everybody. It's not just, well, we're going to help movies and TV make money here in Georgia. No, that's a vehicle to help everybody in Georgia prosper. And I think that's why.
And nobody figured out to do that before.
Not yet. Not until us. And you know what surprises me is nobody's done it since. Because, I mean, anybody else could do the same thing.
Right.
If they wrote the same legislation, they could do it. But... we, you know, the fact that we have the locations and the resources, and of course now more and more we got this incredible studio space that people are building here, and the fact that it's a nonstop flight from LA or New York and several international locations, when you consider Pinewood just built a big facility down south of town, their first one outside.
Yeah, so how thrilled are you that you can like wake up and like just drive to work and like in your own bed?
I feel incredibly fortunate, and it's been the result of a lot of work of a lot of great people in this state to make it happen, and it's wonderful. It's been great.
You mentioned like speaking, like you were the head of something local, the local SAG something?
I was the former local president of the Screen Actors Guild. I'm currently the local first vice president of SAG-AFTRA. We're SAG-AFTRA now that we merged.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm involved in that and supporting the community.
Do you turn a bunch of work down, any work down?
There's been a couple of things that I've turned down because it was not something that I'd really want my kids to see me do on camera.
Okay.
And, you know, you got to think about the fact that this stuff lives forever. Forever.
So...
yeah.
Even if I don't know, are they grown now? Like you don't care? Like just something you don't want to put your name on necessarily, because like that's the line in the sand for you.
Yeah, is
like,
I think so. I think you got to have that, and there's nothing wrong with it. Because you know, in the end, we all want to work. We get it, but I think I understand that all life doesn't happen in a vacuum. I mean, you know, I have my family and I have people around me, and I want to be a part of stuff that I can happily say, that's good. Now, I've done some stuff just for the check.
Right.
I'm not ashamed of that. Right. Everybody does. And there's some things that, you know, I'll not brag about.
Right.
Because they're not that great.
Right.
But then there's a few things where, you know, I'm asked to do something or play something on camera where there's a lot of times when people see this stuff and they have a hard time distinguishing between fantasy and reality. And so at some point, I think I have to do that. And so I just make that choice. And that's me. Other people can do what they want, but I have to do what I'm comfortable with.
Who has a difficult time distinguishing fantasy and reality?
Sometimes the audience does.
Like, you think they'll think you're a bad guy in real life?
Sometimes. Yeah. They'll think you're that guy on TV. Not often, but sometimes.
Okay.
You know.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I've had it happen to my friends where they get odd approaches out in public from people who've seen them in something and right. think that's who they are.
Right.
No, that's a character I play. that's me. This is me.
Right.
That's my job. It's what I do for a living.
Right. Do you listen to any podcasts?
Occasionally I do. Yeah.
Have you heard Mark Maron, WTF?
I have.
So he talks to everybody.
Yes,
right?
He does.
He's, I think we all can thank, you know, this form of type of sort of long form interviewing to him. He put it sort of on the map, right?
Yeah.
And even he says, like, you know, when he had Edie Falco in, you know, that was a recent one, he's like, it's hard not to say, like, you are Carmella. You know what I mean? Like, and I can imagine how super,
yeah,
you know, how that fame, that double-edged sort of fame has to be super hard for those people, because it's like, we do, like, every Sunday you come in our screen and we can identify with you as this thing.
Yeah, and you penetrate in a way that some of that iconic stuff, it's great and it's powerful, but then when you go try to move on to something else,
right,
that image is indelibly marked into somebody's head, and then sometimes it's hard to overcome.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you've been typecast?
In some ways, yeah. But typecasting overall is not a bad thing. They have to be able to put you in a category. So I don't mind it. I play a lot of law enforcement.
Right.
And I have for years.
Right.
Now
that's the first thing I think of when I think about
now,
you.
Now I've moved into person of authority. You know?
Above law enforcement.
Yeah. Like Secretary of Defense.
Right.
Chief of Detectives.
Right.
You know, Mayor. Governor. You know, person of authority.
Right.
So that's fine. I've graduated a little bit.
Right.
But... okay, so I played more cops than most guys out there. I played more cops than Dennis Franz. Okay, but hey, it's a great living. I'm not going to complain.
Right,
I love it.
Right,
it's fine. That's where they've typed me. Fine.
Right,
great. Keep hiring me, man. Bring it on.
Right,
I'm good with it. It hasn't been inhibiting. It's to me, it's just been rewarding, and I'm working, so I'm grateful.
So you never go, oh great, another judge. That never. But
well,
you?
Once in a while, if there's nothing, if it's just kind of blah, but like I just played a judge again on Longmire, but it was this judge that's kind of this, I don't want to say redneck, but it's a Wyoming judge who's a good old boy and runs his court the way he's going to run it.
Sure.
Because this is my room.
Right.
And it was really fun. So I thought, oh, this is cool. This is something different. So I had a great time.
Are you someone that doesn't like to talk about, I don't know, process or whatever that word is?
No, I'll talk about process.
Okay, well, cool. Some people like...
I don't like dishing dirt on other people.
No.
I'm that's the only thing that bothers me. I'll talk about just about anything else.
No, I don't want to ask you to diss anybody. Maybe off camera. No. I'll off camera.
No.
Maybe off mic I'll ask you, but that's not... I just mean like, okay, so this guy, right? When you want, are you the kind of guy that has to do a lot of work in the trailer to kind of get... Or are you just a guy that like... The lights come on and
It depends on the role. It depends how far a reach it is. If it's something that's really in my wheelhouse, Typically not. It's just a matter of getting yourself in a clear headspace and focused and being prepared. I mean, I bust my butt to show up prepared, because to me, preparation is freedom. Because if I'm there and I know my lines and I got it all down, I'm free to do whatever happens. But it's when you're not prepared that you're not really free in the moment to make the most of the moment. And that's the magic on camera, is making it happen right now. And so I try to prepare myself so that I can be free, and free enough that it, and then the other part is, you get in, you finally get in there with the other actors, and what if somebody else has a cool idea and everybody wants to run with it? I got to be free and confident enough. Yeah, I can do that.
Right.
Because I'm ready. I'm right. Cool. Let's do it. That's great. Let's right. run. And that maybe end up being better for me. So great. But I can only take advantage of it if I'm prepared.
So what does that mean for you?
Well, read the script, know your lines, spend the time getting a real grasp on the character, you know, history, moment before, what got you to this point, anything about this backstory of the character that fills in the moment. I don't waste a lot of time on stuff that isn't applicable in the moment. I think a lot of actors waste a lot of time on history or backstory that's they're never going to really use except to think about it. And people don't pay money to watch actors think. They want to make stuff happen. So I focus on stuff that has to do with the moment we're working on. And so I get all that down. And then, you know, physically get a good night's sleep. If I can exercise, you know, get myself the instrument just kind of relaxed and ready and go there. And the main thing for me is, once I've done all that, I just want to go have fun. Because I have the great pleasure of working with some incredibly talented people. And I want to enjoy this. I want to ride this ride with this director or with these actors and walk out of here going, man, that was fun. Let's do it again. You know? So that's pretty much it. That's the simple version.
Well, I think what you said there, preparation is freedom. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Like that's like, I mean, that's life, right?
Yeah.
No matter what you do for a living, when you know the stuff, then you're free to do whatever.
Like, it's like John Wooden said, failure to prepare is preparing to fail.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of folks are lazy or want to take shortcuts. I'm one of those people, by the way, or I can be.
Well, I don't have any problem with, you know, finding the shortest way there, but not at the expense of the quality of the work. You know, that doesn't do anybody any favors.
Do you, if you're flipping through and you come on, do you watch, not watch? Depends on your mood.
I think it depends. Once in a while, if it was fun, if it was a cool project, and sometimes, you know, if an old thing pops up, just to see if I was any good,
right?
You know, because you don't remember.
Have you cringed at old stuff?
I don't know that I've cringed. I do remember a couple of moments where I thought, "Wow, that wasn't bad. That was pretty good." Okay, all right. Because, you know, time passes and you just sort of lose connection with it. And I don't remember anything cringing. No.
All right.
So but I probably have.
I'm how about your kids? Have your kids?
Oh, God, yes.
They've cringed it a lot?
Yeah. They go, oh, my God, Dad, that's you? Oh, my God. Dad, you had hair. That's weird.
I didn't want to do this, but I just kind of feel like I have to, because I keep running against every show that was ever on, right?
Was
popular at that time. So just early 90s, In the Heat of the Night, Murphy Brown, Wings, Home Improvement, mm-hmm. Delta, Roseanne. Like that's just 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll do a little bit of that when I do the intro of your thing. But that's just you pick a moment in time and you were in those shows. Okay. That's just fascinating to me. Do you remember your line in House Party?
Oh, I had a few.
Okay.
I was one of the two cops that chased those guys through the night. I remember that was like 2.5 weeks worth of nights. Because the whole thing takes place at night. So you're shooting at night the whole time. And that was the first time I'd ever done that. It was really hard.
Right.
It was really because, you know, obviously your body clock is completely flipped around. And not to mention that when you're shooting during the night, when you're working, you have to be on. I mean, you can't be half asleep. So that was rough. But it was fun. Those guys were fun.
Right. And that's one of those things that if it gets shown in the world somewhere, you'll get a check for.
Yeah. A couple bucks.
All right. You did do an episode of The Sopranos.
I did.
Deputy Feetham.
I did.
Okay. Which season and what episode was that?
I think it was, what did you, 7 seasons?
Well, it was 6.5. Remember they did that weird thing?
I think it was 5 or 6.
Either way.
It was Johnny Sack's daughter got married. Johnny Sack was in
and
prison. He got a 6-hour reprieve.
Right. And you guys
I was one of the two marshals that took him, it was with him through the whole time at his daughter's wedding.
Right. You horrible, horrible people.
I know.
Made him cry in front of his family.
We did.
Gave him that, just, you said, hey man.
We did.
Time's up.
We literally drug him out of his daughter's wedding and he was crying.
Bastards.
Yeah. That's when they all lost all respect for Johnny Sack.
Oh yeah.
He was crying in front of everybody.
Right.
Yeah. But man, that was a great moment. I remember very vividly. That was one of those. So let me tell you a story about that. So inevitably, throughout the history of my career, whenever me and my wife or me and my family book a trip, I will get a job. It's just always happened that
way. The bad luck, you mean?
Yeah. Well, no, I'll get a job, especially if there's money to lose. Like we've already put a deposit down that we can't get back.
Right.
I will get a call for those dates.
Right.
Always happens.
Okay.
So we booked, we took this vacation. We're going to Washington, D.C. We take the kids. Always wanted to take them to D.C. And we literally just checked into the hotel. We're, you know, doing that family horsing around, sitting around, farting around in the hotel.
Sure.
And my phone rings. Ugh. It's my agent.
Right.
And my wife gives me that look like, oh, shit. So I go, I take the call, and I hang up the phone, and she looks at me, and I said, it's the Sopranos. And she said, okay, I got to be there tomorrow. I got to go audition in New York. But it was a godsend. It worked out. The next day, everybody wanted to go to the zoo. And me and my oldest daughter were kind of about the zoo.
Right.
So it's a 4-hour drive from D.C. to New York. So, and the audition was sort of in the middle of the day. I said, all right, well, here's the deal. You guys go to the zoo. Hannah and I will get up early. We'll drive to New York. I'll do the audition. We'll come back. We'll all have dinner together that night. We'll do it. And we did. And I booked the gig.
Do you remember the audition?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They wanted me to come back to meet Steve Buscemi, the director, but they knew that I couldn't do that. So I remember that I stood longer and we improvised a little bit and did a few more things on tape so they could have it.
Right.
My daughter and I had a quick slice of pizza and got back in the van and drove to DC.
So there was no callback. It was just, okay, you got it.
Yeah. I got a call, I think the next day.
And when, how much long later did you shoot it?
I think I went to New York, maybe a week or 10 days later.
And who's the actor that plays Johnny Sack? Didn't mean to put you on the spot.
Wow. Vince Curatola.
Okay. And so talk about
lovely guy.
Right.
Really nice guy.
It's always the guys that plays the biggest motherfuckers that are the nicest guys.
Oh, sweetheart of a guy, man. Right? We had a lot of laughs. He was so kind. They were all great. But I remember, you know, we're at the wedding.
Right.
And they don't do nothing small on the Sopranos.
Oh, please. Okay. They legit put on a $100,000 wedding, right?
Big church. And I remember it's in the church and we're in this holding room off the church and they're all there.
The whole cast.
Everybody. Top to bottom.
Right. Was that one of those starstruck moments?
That was one of those moments where I called my wife and I said, I'm on the fucking Sopranos. Because it was so fun. They were sitting around like this big Italian family talking about this guy they knew who just had a heart attack. And they're all going, oh, I told this stupid son of a bitch, he's going to the doctor. I told him to go to the doctor. He's such a stupid idiot. What the? And now he's in the freaking hospital. He deserved it, the stupid jackass. And they're going back and forth, you know, and because I'm half Italian. It was like the dinners that we used to have in my grandparents' house. And it was priceless, man. I had so much fun doing
it. And are you saying that was just them talking off camera? That wasn't the lines.
That was all off camera. They're like one big Italian family.
Right, because they've been working together for 10
years.
They've
been working together forever, and it was just a treat. It was awesome.
That's so cool, dude.
Great experience.
That's so cool. It's, as soon as you said the wedding, I remember your character, and I remember that scene, because I am someone that's gone through the entire...
It was fun.
The entire, what do you call it?
That was a good time.
Couple that I've never heard of, My Fake Fiance. Never heard that one.
Mm-hmm.
Here's Criminal Intent.
Yeah.
So you play the same.
I played the Chief of D's on Criminal Intent.
Chief of D's.
Seasons, yeah.
But that's the same character on a different on the other show, right? Because they do that.
They do. Although this Chief of D's had not been on any other shows before. They had just hired me to be the new chief on that.
Right.
Those couple of seasons.
Right. Army Wives, that was shot here or South Carolina?
Charleston.
So my wife grew up with Bridget. You know who she is?
I remember. I met her, yes.
Okay.
She's lovely.
My wife grew up with her.
Oh, really?
We were at their wedding in LA before we moved here.
Oh, nice.
She's worked a ton.
Yeah, she does really good.
She's like almost a female you. She's worked a shitload.
Great. She's a sweet girl. They're nice people.
Halt and Catch Fire, I meant to watch, but yeah, didn't. Is that good?
Good show.
Yeah.
Good show. Good actors. Good people.
Right.
You know what's funny about that is I did the pilot and I did a few episodes the first couple seasons, and my daughter just got cast in the last episode of Halt and Catch Fire.
Dude, how awesome is that?
I was so proud.
Well, I didn't know.
I totally geeked out that she was on the show.
Well, I can imagine. Well, you said you didn't like that your wife was listed on there. I don't know how much you want to talk about your family, but your daughter is an
actor. My daughter is an actor, and she's pursuing it now.
Right.
And she's doing really great, and I'm just enormously proud of her.
Did you ever have the conversation with her? Like, she said, I want to do this, and you said, great, go for it. I'll be supportive, and if you don't, I'm fine with that, too. Or
we had some interesting conversations because it sort of came out of left field. She was ready to graduate from high school, and she wanted to go to school to major in art or art history and possibly minor in acting. And so I remember very vividly, she'd gotten accepted to the University of Kentucky. Because she also rode horses. And so she thought about going to school there, being able to ride horses, doing art. And then they have an okay theater department. So we're driving back from Lexington, and she was really quiet. And she wasn't saying anything. It was just really strange. I thought, oh, what's going on here? I said, all right, so what's up? It's the deal. We're going to be in the car for a while. She said, really? I said, yeah, come on, spit it out, whatever it is. I want to be an actress and I want to move to Los Angeles.
Wow.
Okay. So we actually had a great conversation. We had a great conversation. I said, really? I said, you not seen the roller coaster that we've been through? She said, no, I that's it. I really believe it after all this time. I said, well, I wish you'd told me that before we applied to the schools we'd applied to, because, we'd applied to some different ones if her focus was going to be on acting.
Right.
But I said, well, I'll tell you what, here's the deal. I, who am I to tell you not to follow your dream? If that's your dream, I think that'd be horrible. If you really believe this is great. You need to study, you need to train. And I was really straight up with her. And I said that, you know, I think you need to model yourself after girls like Rachel McAdams and Anne Hathaway and Amy Adams and all these young, talented girls that are skilled. These girls have chops. They're going to be around for a long time.
They're not just the ingenue of the moment.
They're not just a pretty face.
Right.
That, you know, these girls have mad skills. So you need to train, because you're in this, just like me, you're in it for the long game. She's more of a character. So you got to be in it for the long haul. So you need to find a good school where you can get into a good theater department, and then you can take some classes on the outside and do whatever you want to do, but just really train and get really, really good. And so she went to Georgia College down in central Georgia. There's a pretty decent theater department. And then her last semester she spent at Lambda in London, which was a fantastic experience. We got to go there to see her last performance, and what amazing people and just great energy. And the whole program there was great. She got great training there. And I know she's my daughter, and I'll admit I'm a little biased, but she's good. I've had people in the industry tell me, she's good. We like her. Not just because of my last name, but she's good.
Right. But I feel like it'd almost be the other way. Like you'd be even more critical, meaning if she wasn't good, you know what I'm saying? It would hurt
be straight. But I also told her this. I said, you know what? You're too young, and I think it would be really unfair for me to evaluate your talent, because you're a kid. But here's one thing I am going to watch, is your work ethic. Because you know and I know what it takes to do this. You have to do certain things without people telling you. If your mom and I notice that you're not putting in the energy that we know you got to do, then we're going to have a problem. But as long as you're willing to do the work, I'm not going to judge your talent, because I know that evolves. I know.
Right.
I've seen the process with people who at one point, you know, they were good, they're okay, but then all of a sudden it clicks. They click in. Because they kept working and they hit it. They hit something that sent them to a different level. And I don't want to ever discourage that with my kids or with anybody. But I just wanted her to know that the whole point is that the kind of commitment you know you have to have is what we're going to expect. because otherwise it's going to be too painful for you, which means it's going to be too painful for us.
Right.
And if it gets to that point, I'm going to be honest with her. But so far, she's done some really good work. She's getting good responses from the other people in the industry. She's working. She's happy. She's comfortable in her own skin, which I'm so proud of, especially for a young woman in today's world. All my girls are like that. They're all just comfortable in their own skin. I love that. They're just good, smart,
I mean, isn't that
strong-willed
all,
people.
All there is to, because like, you know, we, so my wife and I were not the college people, right? I tried a bunch of things, including stand-up. My wife was an actor for a long time. So if our kids wake up one day and say, yeah, we want to go and move to, like, who are we to say no, right? Yeah. Or if they want to go the super college route, you just,
yeah.
I just know that I've got to watch them do whatever they want to do and
right.
like hope that it's not too painful as they make all those mistakes. Because mine are young still, but I just feel like I'm not looking forward to those teenage years and those early 20 years when you know they're going to do the stupidest stuff and date the stupidest people. And you seem to be very relaxed about it.
Well, but I also know that there's a lot of learning from that. We're all going to make mistakes.
Right.
And that's okay. You know, my thing with them is fail boldly, you know?
Right.
Run head first in the damn wall. Do it.
Right.
Why not? You'll remember not to do it again if it doesn't work out. But then again, sometimes it works. Sometimes it's brilliant. Or sometimes it leads to something even better. So I don't want to do anything to discourage them at all, whatever they want to do. And I'm just incredibly proud of them.
All right. I think that's a good stopping point.
Okay.
Anything else you want to talk about?
Sounds cool. I'll talk about whatever you want to talk about.
No, dude, I'm just super stoked. We haven't talked in many years. I mean, I know you through other people and it's been a super long time. And
cool.
So I just thought you're exactly the kind of person I want to have on this show because I think you're a super cool dude.
Well, I appreciate that. So are you, man. Thanks for this. I appreciate you being interested.
All right, dude. Thanks.
Always nice to know somebody's watching.
All righty. Told you that was fun. And right at an hour, I think. Some of these long episodes lately, I know. A bit too long sometimes. Charlie told me to stop apologizing. So I take that back. I do not apologize. All right. Hope you enjoyed it. Have a great, great weekend, everybody. More great episodes already in the can. And even more cool interviews to come. Many of which I've already scheduled. Someone I'm seeing today that I'm not even going to tell you about because it's too good. All right. Great weekend, everybody. Love you, miss you, mean it. I got to run.